This is 5-on-3. Center ice for all things Islanders, Rangers, and all news across the NHL on WFUV Sports.
And welcome into 5-on-3, FUV's best, if only, hockey podcast. The Stanley Cup playoffs are here. We have a loaded crew, Grace McCarron behind the board, but the on-air folks, two Rangers beat reporters, two Islanders beat reporters, myself, Lou Orlando, Jack Warner on the Rangers side, Nick Palmer, Michael Matuch on the Islanders side. Makes a lot of sense considering the Rangers and Islanders are in the playoffs to varying levels of success. But hey, we got a whole show to get into that. Boys, how are we doing? How are we feeling? I want to get inside your minds.
I'm so excited to be here just in this setting right now with microphones, but I think the only thing that would be better than this is just this same exact table breakdown in like a dimly lit room with like dinner and just like getting it really romantic because I really like these guys.
Perhaps at a bar of some kind.
Maybe at a bar that's playing the Kings game.
A Sinatra record in the background, slowly.
Just a random humming. New York bar that plays games for Carolina teams. That'd be kind of cool.
Leave at 6:30.
Maybe even 6:30 tonight. Anyway, Nick, where's your pants at? Why aren't you wearing pants?
What? That was a really weird intro, but yeah, that's okay.
It happens.
Okay. I'm okay.
I'm not.
This this team blows, man. I'm really sad. Kings are good though. All right, how are you doing, Mikey?
I'm great. I'm so excited that I showed up here yesterday morning at 1. Well, yesterday afternoon. I woke up in a daze. I got my days confused. And I was so ready. I was here 24 hours ago. So I think we're going to have a great pod today.
I mean, I think everyone's locked in. Everyone's excited. We haven't been on air since the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs, which is kind of crazy. Some issues last week. Not going to get into it all. Maybe having to do with the person whose name is in the title of the show now 2 weeks ago. Moving right
along.
He's
not listening.
He's not listening to the 5-on-3. But this is 5-on-3. We're off to a great start, guys. Like I said, Stanley Cup playoffs have started. Rangers and Islanders in the playoffs. And I really want to start with the Islanders because my goodness.
No.
Why are we starting off with a sour note?
What
are we
doing? Because we always start Rangers.
It's not going to be sour. It's just going to be so funny. The Carolina Hurricanes go up 2-0 on the Islanders. And you know what? Game one, closer, I think, than the score indicated.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe a couple calls go the other way and you're fine. Boy, game two, what a collapse, eh? I mean, to be up 3-0 and then after a special Nick Palmer tweet, 5 unanswered goals, including a power play goal. Boys, can you take me through what your minds have been going through?
I don't want to put this all on Palmer here.
I want Michael first. Michael will tell us how we're going to get out of this. Go ahead, Mike.
No, the thing is, though, this team, when it's backed up against the wall, that's when it plays its best hockey. And that's the only way that this team can play hockey. If this team's expecting to coast in and get an easy win, 3-0, no. This team's always going to make it interesting. At some point in this season, they're going to get hot and they're going to get cold. They got cold. Thing is, though, when Patrick Roy says, all right, guys, I'm going to flip the switch now. No more messing around. Then they do it. Then they turn this whole shebang around because I'm trying to introduce hockey to my friends who don't like hockey as much. And even they were stunned after game two. Their jaws were on the floor as well. They could not believe what they had just seen.
Yes, but also, if you look at the stats from game two.
Yeah.
The idea of painting that as a comeback. No, it was
a letdown. They turtled.
Yes. But it was also an ass kicking from the Carolina Hurricanes. Like, if you look at the shot attempts, Carolina had 120 shot attempts, and the only reason the Islanders weren't losing until the third period was because they were shot blocking like crazy. And Varley was great.
Did you delete your tweet?
Which one?
The one about the penalty kill that immediately
soured? Yeah, I didn't think that it was a good tweet to have up anymore.
It's fair.
I think that's a good, bad for the brand.
It's just like, I don't know.
I mean, they had 83 minutes in penalties, dude.
And
83.
I was sitting next to our boy Stefan Rosner at the Ranger game. Three shots on goal in the third period. Like, I mean, the third period, jokes aside, the third period goes about as bad as it can for the Islanders. And again, to be up 3-0, a chance to take a game on a road against a really tough Carolina team. This is the Hurricanes right now are still the betting favorites to win the Stanley Cup. Yeah, so there's a ton of respect out there for them. You had a chance to take a game on the road in convincing fashion and then head back to UBS even and feeling like momentum on your side. Instead, you turtle. I mean, I think back to the goal that puts them up 4-3 that happens 9 seconds after the game-tying goal. What I want to try and figure out is, what's Varlamov doing and what's Pajot doing? Because, I mean, Varlamov, where is he going, first of all, that he leaves that wide open? And Pajot just freezes in the circle, and you know he's got to be F3. He'd be the guy deep in the slot covering. That's where the goal gets scored. So I'm wondering a couple of things. Like, just an absolute letdown defensively by the Islanders. Yep. And, I mean, that's glaring, but I feel like defensively there's been a lot of issues these first two games.
You would have less defensive problems with a bowl of oatmeal than you would with the New York Islanders.
What's
right
Paul
now.
Duke doing these days?
Like, okay, I can try and explain what happened there.
I would, if you want to.
And then I'll give Mike a chance to try and explain. What it seems to me happened in the last 8 minutes of that game, the Islanders started losing one-on-one battles. And as soon as you start losing one-on-one battles to the Carolina Hurricanes, they will start scoring on you. I think we saw that especially on the boards. We saw them not winning those fights anymore. And then as far as Varlamov's concerned, I don't have an explanation for why he was not covering, but I will say that goal, I think, is the reason why Ilya Sorokin is starting Game 3. Because you go to Varlamov because you want a positionally sound goalie who's going to stand tall and not overreact to anything. And on that fourth goal, you saw him not in position, not doing what his specialty is. And that's why you have to go Sorokin and hope that he finds it and steals you a game.
Well, so I really want to dive right into this, because this was the big story, I think, going into the playoffs, is that Varlamov was the goalie starting for the Islanders. And after game one, after game two, and all the way in between, the media is asking Waugh about the status of this goaltender situation. You get some really weird quotes. It kind of felt like they were still leaning towards playing Varlamov even after the game two collapse. And now you get the announcement that it's Sorokin start. And for me, I don't think that you can go an entire playoffs, especially one where you go down 2-0 and Varlamov hasn't stolen you a game. I'm not going to pin a lot of this on Varlamov. But facts are facts. You've lost 2 straight. Sometimes hockey, you just need to change something up. I think you can't live with yourself if you don't at least try Sorokin for a game.
I like that a lot, just because I was thinking back, if Varlamov wasn't in that game too and it was Ilya Sorokin in his spot, would the game have been that much different? I knew that, and honestly, I don't really think it really changes, because some of the Carolina was peppering.
120 shots, it doesn't matter what goalie you have.
Oh my gosh.
It doesn't.
Well, before you guys, a really interesting quote from head coach Patrick Waugh said, "I was a Ferrari. I could be a little bit more bumpy in all this. So today we're going with the Ferrari, Sorokin. We had the Cadillac the first two games."
I love
that. Interesting quote. I like that one. That one I like. He had a really interesting quote with Varlamov about making up for some defensive plays. I think kind of inferring that Varlamov's better, that Varlamov helps make up for lacking defense more than Sorokin does.
I mean, the other thing that I was going to say is I understand it's a different team, it's a different year, but with exception to one or two games that got, actually it was really just one game that got away in the series last year, Sorokin, other than that shot by Paul Stastny in the last game, I was there, that was the one of the most depressing things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Because that's a save he makes 99 times out of 100.
Yeah.
Sorokin played well in this series against this team last year.
Yeah.
And I just don't, like, you knew you were going to get to a point where you have two goalies that are playing too good. Well, actually, Varlamov was playing better than Sorokin. But you have two goalies that are talented enough that I don't see what the hurt is in getting a different look. Like Lou said, if Varley couldn't have stole you one of those first two games.
He was sneaky playing well down the stretch in April. Sorokin's last few games of the season, don't get it twisted. Like, Varlamov gets them into the playoffs. Sorokin cleaned it up in April and really down the stretch there, where it's not like you're not turning it over to someone that's been slumping beyond belief the last few games.
I also don't think that there's a better scenario, because this year has been a little more erratic for Sorokin than we've seen in the last couple. I do think there isn't a better scenario than rolling him out there at home for the first game.
Yeah.
I think being in front of a home crowd and knowing the assignment, knowing that it's you're down 2-0 and you need to get back into this series, I think they were in this very position last year. They dropped the first two games in Carolina last year, came back to New York and blew the doors off Carolina in game three. So I do like the way that this sets up for Sorokin, but this the one thing that really makes me nervous is, and you're going to have to play him. Unless Varley was going to lead you to a sweep, you were going to have to at some point play Sorokin. But the thing that makes me nervous is just Carolina being a team that even before this series started, but now you're seeing, well, in these first two games of the series, just spray shots. Yeah. They find any way to just pepper goalies. And, Nick, we've talked about this before throughout the year on the show. For as elite of a goalie as Ilya Sorokin can be, he is really bad with rebounds. Really bad with rebounds. And if any goalie that's their weakness really scares me against a team like the Hurricanes, who just peppers the goal.
I think the biggest reason why Sorokin is starting, and all of the points you've made are so valid, is because you can't make a change anywhere else in terms of personnel. Look, maybe Matt Martin is that one fluctuating piece. You know, Wall said he'll be a game time decision. That's fine. But it's not like you're throwing Ruslan Isakov and Julien Gauthier out on the ice for game three against the Carolina Hurricanes. You have the guys you have on the ice. The only change that you can feel somewhat confident about making that it won't negatively impact your team is at the goaltending position. So you have to make a change down 2-0. Goaltending is the only place you can do it. Good luck, Ilya Sorokin.
Hockey's weird because, again, like I'm not pinning either of the losses on Varlamov, and I think you could put Varlamov out there for game three and still have a chance to win. I don't think it should be an indictment on Varlamov's play, but it is kind of a hockey thing that if you change your goaltender, sometimes that sparks a team. There's no rhyme or reason. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. And again, to me, it's just, I'd feel better knowing that you at least tried Sorokin in this series. In terms of the play in front of the goaltenders, because we spent a lot of time talking about the goaltender situation,
Are
you confident that they can clean it up? I do think there's something to coming home to a UBS arena. I'm kind of curious to see what the vibe's going to be tonight. Now, Matuch will be there. I think we'll get, you'll keep us up to date on what that's going to be, because Islanders fans are in a really weird spot. I have no doubt that they're going to bring energy, but you're coming off, is it safe to say, the most demoralizing loss of the season, given the context?
Yeah, I would say so. Thing is, it's going to be tough for the Islanders just clean things up, I think, defensively. Do you guys know how many third-period games this team has blown so far this season?
Something astronomically large.
It's in the teens, isn't it?
25.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Nearly 30% of the Islanders' games, they've blown a third period lead.
It's a great,
so
I mean, not a great stat,
it's I, that's that yeah yeah.
Mm.
That's the only thing you could just say, like, this team has blown leads in the third period, it's dishonest because it's dishonest to the people that are watching. I mean, the team competes for a good 50, good 45, but that last, they just can't do it.
But, I mean, you even look at the way they scored the first couple goals of the game. You had Palmieri getting physical in front of the net, getting in there, getting the first goal of the game.
Great with rebounds.
And then you had Horvat at the buzzer with a gorgeous slap shot. That was sick. So then, you have like a nice little two-goal cushion at the intermission. You're feeling good. You're like, okay, this is where we want to be. This is where we got him. You go out in the third period, Anders Lee just a couple minutes in on the power play. Mm-hmm. It keeps building. And then you just didn't see a damn thing after that. Like, just not a thing.
Yes. I mean, yes, that's what happened. That's exactly what happened. And we talk about the 60-minute game so often. Watt talks about the 60-minute game. It's so important. But the one thing that maybe gives me a little bit of hope is that it was almost a 60-minute game.
Yeah.
So they're not, you know, 40, 50 minutes off from completing an excellent game of hockey. They're very close. The problem is they don't have the ability like the Carolina Hurricanes do to turn it on and make it noticeable. And the Carolina Hurricanes down in the third period, you almost feel like they're bound to make it, if not really tough on you, that they're going to take that game. And I don't know if there's a workaround from that. And on that last goal, I do want to mention, partially Dobson, man.
Yeah.
Like, if you have, I'm sorry, no disrespect to Martinuk, Noah Dobson is a lot better than Martinuk. You can't be allowing takeaways in your own zone, because I think that's partially also why Varlamov wasn't ready. He wasn't expecting Noah Dobson to lose the puck there, and that is on the goalie, but come on, Noah.
I mean, yeah, a lot went wrong in those an unbelievable lot went wrong in that 9 seconds, because you hear Wah after the game talk about, I was thinking about using the timeout for the game-tying goal. I wanted to see how the faceoff went, felt good about the Pageau line, and things just collapsed so quickly. Are they running? Are they taking a run at Gensel in this game? Because I know that there's at the end of game two, and I kind of thought this was stupid. It's not like Gensel slap shotted the puck into the empty net. He's getting chased down as he's trying to seal the game, and he takes a hard wrister. And then the final, 50 seconds, there's a ton of scrums and a ton of fights, a ton of whistles. I imagine this is going to be that the Islanders are going to set the tone and try and be very physical. I think that's a thing that a lot of times underdogs will try and do, especially down 2-0 in a series. Should we watch for anything special with going at Gensel or anything like that?
I thought that was more of a Twitter thing of people going crazy on that, and I honestly didn't like it because that felt like the crying that we saw after the slap shot into the empty net. It's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. And if you make it a big deal and make it a bigger deal than it is, you're not going to be focused on winning this game. Yeah. So first things first.
Anything you guys want to hit on before we pivot?
The Islanders are not good.
Predictions for game three?
The Islanders will win.
Okay. I do think, I think.
I the Islanders will win.
Is this a situation where they need to take both at UBS? That's kind of right. If to have any shot in the series, you need to take both at
they,
UBS.
They need
right?
both because going into Carolina, they needed at least one. Mm-hmm. And for them to, I'm not even going to. Yeah. For that to happen,
but
it's.
Even last year's series hurt really bad because you could tell that they had what was necessary to win the series. They just didn't turn on the Jets soon enough. They went down 2-0 in Carolina, like I said, blew the doors off Carolina first game in UBS, then got the doors blown off them in UBS to go down 3-1. They go back to Carolina elimination game and beat Carolina and then come back to New York trying to make it a game 7. They take it to overtime, and then Ilya just lets up the worst goal he's probably ever let up in his life. Sorry, Nick. So I think last year's series can definitely teach you something about this year's series, which is like they need to take both games at UBS, because you could see last year that series could have been so much different if they had just taken two at UBS.
I'm seeing a lot of Canes in three talk online. I think the Twitter has decided that this series is over. Islanders have a chance to prove Twitter wrong. Game starts at 7:30 tonight, so watch it however you want to watch it.
I'll be watching it with Michael Matucci.
Watch it at home.
On Twitter.
Watch it with a friend. Or
watch
it. Else,
watching this.
Bar,
maybe
something.
More than friends. You know.
What am I missing here?
Nothing.
Jack's a bad person.
What?
I said that. That's my fault. I can't run away from a good bit. Rangers are also in the playoffs. unlike the Islanders, Rangers are up 2-0. In their series, it's been...
And they're all married, so they don't have to focus on, like, you know, all that stuff. That stuff's done already. They're done with that stage.
Kreider and Mika are dating.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, you're right.
Let's talk business here. Rangers are up 2-0 over the Washington Capitals, and it has been, for my eyes, a dominant two games for the New York Rangers. Game two gets physical and chippy, but at least right now, it seems like all the prognosticators are right. Washington's just not good enough, not fast enough, not deep enough to keep up with this Rangers team. Washington's in a similar spot that the Islanders are in right now, where Washington goes home really looking to salvage this series, and it doesn't feel good for them. Rangers have played a really smooth first two games. I'm not going to overreact. I remember how the last first two games of the playoffs went for them last year. I will say this. Washington Capitals are not last year's New Jersey Devils.
And any time that Washington gets the Rangers in any sort of a chokehold, they can't hold on to it. Like, even last night, you saw them start to assert a little more. They score the first goal. You know, they're able to tie the game up. I think the biggest thing that's just stood out to me the most through these first two games is that Washington just has no answer for them on special teams, like, at all, except for the one power play goal last night that that Strom had. Besides that, oh, actually, Tom Wilson was on the power play as well. But
a deflection doesn't count.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But no, seriously, like, they've had no – the fact that the Rangers managed to score two power play goals and a shorthanded goal – and the way that the penalty kill has looked in game one, it's been insane. That to me has been the most just damning thing for the Capitals. And I think this series, if the Rangers played any weaker at, because I don't really think that it's been that insanely lopsided at 5-on-5 necessarily. I just think if the Rangers had played any weaker at on the penalty kill or on the power play. Honestly, they haven't even been that incredible on the power play, but
they've done enough.
They've done enough. But if they were, I guess the PK is really the biggest thing that
I'm gonna hone in on the PK because you've held the Caps 2-for-9 on the power play. I believe it was 0-for-4, 0-for-5 in game one. The Caps get two goals on the power play in game two, but the PK's dazzled defensively. You've got Gaudreau and Vesey playing some of their best defensive hockey, and every single PK unit is turning defense into offense. Barkley Goodrow had a breakaway rush on the PK, and the only reason he doesn't shoot is because he fell for the old TJ Oshie drop, 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 and he drops the pass back when there's no one behind him. But Mika strips the puck from Ovechkin, sets up a beautiful Keandre Miller shorthanded goal. The PK has just been like, it looks like the best PK in hockey right now, and when you combine that with the fact that, especially on the power play, they have neutralized Alex Ovechkin. I mean, they're doing everything that you'd want them to do.
They're absolutely doing everything you want to do. And I want to give props to Gerard Gallant.
Oh, no, you don't. No, you
yes,
don't.
I do. Because he's the one who put Kreider on the penalty kill.
That's true.
And he has been fantastic ever since. So, can I start clapping for Gerard Gallant?
Do you want to die?
Way to go, guy. Way to go. Yeah, I thought your penalty kill has been fantastic. Mm-hmm. Zibanejad is playing the best hockey.
I thought he played one of the best games of his season in game two.
And I've been really happy with Roslovic as well, especially in that last game. And that makes the Hedl conversation a lot more interesting.
Do you want to get to this right now?
Can we get into this
so,
right now?
It's Twitter. Rangers Twitter has been a really interesting place. Because after game one, and right all this time, Philip Hedl's practicing. All the quotes are, he looks good, he looks fast. In the back of your mind, you go, he hasn't played a real NHL game since November 4th. And this isn't just an NHL game. We're in the playoffs. So I think what you start to mull over the more and more that this series looks like a win is, do you want to get him a couple games against Washington, a physical team that's down? They have Tom Wilson. I'm not going to say they're going to go headhunting for Philip Hedl, but they're going to play physical and Philip Hedl might be in danger. Or do you want to throw him fresh against, I don't know, the Carolina Hurricanes? Like, that's a scary thing, too, that if he's not sharp, maybe the Islanders come back. Either way, that's also not an ideal situation. Rangers Twitter is starting to go, who are we scratching if Philip Hedl comes back in? And the two people that it really seems to be coming down to were Rempe and Roslovic. After game one, I think I would have scratched Roslovic. Not after game two.
Nope. Yep.
Here's the only saving grace for Rempe in this situation, in my mind. Listen, he starts the scoring in game one. That's awesome. His positioning's nice. He gets a great feed from VC. I thought the biggest pro for keeping him in the lineup was how well the fourth line played in game one. Mm. I mean, you saw it in the amount of time that they got. They were on the ice at the end of the game. Laviolette trusted them. That's not something he's always done, especially with Rempe. They didn't have that trust in game two. VC and Gaudreau have good games. It comes more in special teams. I didn't think Rempe was super special in game two, and it's clear that Laviolette doesn't really trust him in late game situations, up by one, up by two, because Rempe doesn't really touch the ice the last 10 minutes. So in my mind, considering that Roslovic's got 2 points, a beautiful goal that's almost like Marchand-esque from what we saw yesterday. Yep. I mean, it's a beautiful snipe. That first line, even at even strength, actually been pretty good. Like Mika Kreider, Roslovic, probably some of the best that they've played all season long. Mm-hmm. I think it's if you're playing Hedl, you have to scratch Rempe. And the only reason that conversation gets tough is, do you want to scratch Rempe against the Capitals when you know that they're going to play physical and you know they have Tom Wilson?
I'm scratching Rempe. I'm scratching Rempe. Like, I get the physical presence, but you're up 2-0. And
I think I'm leaning towards just wait and play Hedl in round 2. Maybe play him. If you go up 3-0, maybe play him in the last game against the Caps. Mm-hmm. Other than that, like, game 3 is going to get... game 2 got physical. Panarin with that big hit on Oshie. Chippiness the entire time. I don't want Hedl getting in the mix of game 3 when the Caps come home. Like, this game's going to be physical on Friday. Mm. I'm not touching Hedl. Maybe on Sunday.
Okay. I buy that.
Part of me thinks it depends on whether the Caps can steal one in D.C. or not. Because I feel like if this game goes to where... Because right now, the way that those first two games look, even though sweeps are rare in the NHL, you almost have a very, like, preparing for a sweep mindset after watching those first two games. Just even what I thought was a decently played to pretty good play, pretty well played game by Washington yesterday was not enough. I don't think I would rush bringing Hedl back just because of the physicality thing that you're talking about. But at the same time, I don't know if Rempe is as much of a key to them staying on top of things in a physical game as, like, we think he is.
I think it's more the fighting presence, because, like, Rempe, in terms of the actual gameplay, I'm not sure that his physicality is factored in as much as I thought it was going to.
Right, but I'm talking about the fighting presence. Like, I understand that that's a guy you want out there to potentially fire up a bench, and I think that's a guy you want out there to, you know, piss guys off, and it's fun seeing him skate full speed and seeing guys let go of the puck because they're bracing for a hit, and, like, all that
is charge,
fun.
But okay.
But if anything, shut the hell up.
I'm actually thinking more of him as a protector.
Right.
Like,
no,
you have him as the insurance.
I completely, because I agree with you. Sorry. But what I'm saying is when the physicality amps up, and you are looking more for skill players and more finesse guys, you have a chance to bring Filip Hedl back if he's healthy, if he's ready. Mm. I trust, between the physicality I've seen from Panarin in the last game, between the grittiness of that fourth line of VC and Goodrow and whoever you put in there, whether it's Rempe or not, Trocheck, who I think we forget sometimes has been a rat all year, somebody who can get up in people's faces.
Baby.
That's true. We never get forget. That's my boy. But, you know, we never forget that he's a rat, and he's somebody that can always get shitty with somebody and get up in their face and want to, you know, go back and forth with people. You know that Will Cooley, he's young, but he's the same way. He's, you know, duking it out with Tom Wilson, catching elbows to the face, you know, getting in a spat with him. I think Rempe can absolutely be an asset in games where the physicality and the intensity kicks up, but I don't know if he brings enough to the table to where I would want him in over a skill player, like a defined skill player.
That's a great... Do you want...
Well, just... I just the quick point that Roz is so, like, hot right now, that having him on that line with Mika is more beneficial than the physical presence, potentially, that Rempe can bring. I think the Rangers are such a naturally talented scoring team that, yes, the game is going to be physical. I don't see a world, even if Ovechkin comes online, which he hasn't, in which the Capitals are going to outshoot and outscore the New York Rangers. It doesn't happen in my mind.
Yeah, I think when I think about this conversation, it more comes down to protecting Hedl than keeping Rempe in the lineup.
Okay,
where
fine.
I'm not letting Rempe get in the way of me playing Filip Hedl. Let's just put it that way.
Right.
And I think this is a series where you can afford to not play Filip Hedl if you don't want to. And it really comes down to, does the organization think that he needs a game under his belt? Because if you can get him in when they're up 3-0 or 3-1, if you get into a situation like that, maybe that is beneficial for setting up the next series. Because I will say, if I'm going to be a little hesitant about this, but if you are to look ahead and start to think about, all right, who might the Rangers line up against? Whether that's the Islanders, Hurricanes in round 2, if you think long-term and hoping to get to conference finals, if that's a Florida team, Filip Hedl's speed and his aggressiveness with the shot is going to pay dividends. And I don't want to say I'm stealing this point from Blue Shirt's Breakaway, but it's a great point that Greg Kaplan made. The third line's been so good, right? Wennberg, Kako, Cooley, in terms of dominating puck control, dominating scoring chances. I think in the first year, I know in the first game they outshot other lines 11-2, that third when they were on the ice. Yeah. So, like, they've been awesome. The one thing it feels like they don't have is scoring power. Like, Kaapo Kakko still hasn't scored a ton. Wenberg's not a big scorer. Neither is Cooley, for that matter.
Right.
Imagine if you could put Filipiedl with Wennberg and Kakko. And now all of a sudden, you still have speed. That's still a good defensive line. You get a more scoring threat. Cooley fits really well on the line with Gaudreau and Vesey. I start to think about that.
Yeah.
I know there's been a lot of talk about, hey, put Hedl with Kreider and Mika. I would love that as well. I think Roslovic's a bad fit for any other line, though.
And
he's not great defensively.
And I think your point about needing to be cautious about Hedl is important because, yes, he's coming back at the playoffs, and yes, it's convenient or whatever, but this isn't a Mark Stone situation where you knew he was healthy. The Vegas Golden Knights did something called lying, where they cheaters. Said he was hurt. Right. But Hedl was actually
so
hurt, so I think it's important to get him off to a little bit of a slower start. So, yeah.
Yeah, because the only thing is, again, Hedl has always been someone that people have prided him on his speed, like you were mentioning, and his shot. Part of me also thinks, though, if you have a chance to face – sorry, Nick. If you have a chance to face the Hurricanes in the next round, part of me also wonders, do you not want Hedl's first reps of the playoffs, live reps since November, to be against a team of that speed?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're right. You're getting to a certain point where...
But it's a tough decision either way.
You're getting to a certain point where if you don't get him in at the tail end of Washington, well, then you're going to have to throw him in an intense series because you're not... We start looking at the Eastern Conference and the series that are happening right now. Again, the Canes and the Rangers have strongholds in their series. Everything else really across the league has been pretty tight.
Right.
And so, like, the deeper you get into the playoffs, there's not going to be a great chance to throw Hedl in for his first game. So that's, I think, the push and pull of, like, all right, do you want to throw him against Washington? It might be a little low leverage compared to what you might face in later rounds.
But I absolutely hear what you're saying, though, about protecting Hedl, because I'd be lying to you if I said that going into this series, the Rangers, who have had this storied season, President's Trophy winning season, on the on the back of Artemi Panarin having an unbelievable year, I'd be lying to you if I said that I never thought, especially like as they're warming up for game one, just sitting up in the bridge, man, I'm really nervous that they're going to headhunt somebody on the Rangers. Like the way that Tom Wilson, I know that's the easy name to throw out there, but it's not even just Tom Wilson. Lou and I were joking the other day about how we never seen Oshie act in the way that he did the other night. So I think I do really understand. As much as I want to see Hedl back out there, and I do also really, I really believe what I said, that I'd rather him get a rep against the Caps before playing a team, potentially playing the Canes, who are night and day difference with speed. But I do understand what you're saying, because like they scare me in the sense that like I still, you're not out of the woods yet. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some headhunting before the end of this year.
Yeah, I'll say this, though. I just don't want Hedl playing on Friday. I think especially if if you go up three games in the series, I'd like to see Hedl at the tail end of this Cap series. I think that would be beneficial. That's my official take.
Can someone explain to me how Panarin's still playing in this next game?
How is he playing in this game? Speaking of headhunting,
I don't know.
I haven't even talked to Jack about this. And Friedman agrees with me on this, is that the intended point of contact and the first point of contact is chest. Contact's definitely made with the head. I'm curious from a non-biased perspective, Nick Mattucci. Clearly, I already see where you're leaning on this, but what did you guys think of the hit on Oshie?
I'm just surprised that the league opted to not even take a look at it. They opted for no supplemental discipline. They reviewed it. They didn't even do much with it. I personally think it's to the head. When I look at it, I think it's kind of like a bang bang thing. So you can't really determine it that way, but I definitely see, if the league's not gonna do a retaliation, I see the Caps retaliating in this game.
I'd be a little worried for Panarin on Friday.
Yeah.
I think Rangers target is back.
Rangers really love the elbow to the head, don't they?
Yeah.
Wilson elbowed Cooley in the head. It's all going around.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's not something you see from that guy. I guess that's my only comment.
I'll give love to Artemi Panarin right now. Awesome game one. He scores a goal. and then game two, to see him play with that level of physicality. A lot's been said about his recent playoff performances, especially that series against the Devils, and not for nothing, outside of the game winner against Pittsburgh, he's not a huge part of their run in the conference finals 2 years ago. Artemi Panarin's making an impact in a lot of different ways. I'm not going to overreact to the style of play that I've seen from the Rangers, because I don't think that the Caps have the speed to shrink the ice the way that other playoff teams do. But I will say that right now, the Rangers have not had to adjust their offensive play a ton. And I'm curious, if you advance and you play a team like the Hurricanes, the Panthers, or a lot of these good Eastern Conference teams, and the ice does shrink, if it's going to be a culture shock and a jarring experience for the Rangers to have less space on the ice. Because we talk about the different styles of play when you get to the playoffs. I haven't seen the Rangers have to adjust yet a ton. And that's where I do kind of worry. Washington feels like the ugly duckling in this playoffs, that they're really not. They've got some of the physicality to be able to play a playoff-style game. You see that in Game 2. They don't have the speed, and they don't have the depth.
Right, and especially your top guys, like Zibanejad, loves to use the ice. Panarin loves to use the ice. So it'll be up to them to adjust their play, and
that's scary.
It's a little
they
scary.
They haven't the last couple seasons.
But clearly Panarin's getting ready to do that, so.
All right. There, Rangers-wise, is there anything that we need else that we need to hit on?
Quicken.
That was actually something that I was wondering about. If they go up 3-0, do they put Quicken?
No, you can't. We'll get into this with honestly, it's a good lead-in for what we can hop to next, which is Ullmark and Swayman. You don't mess with the momentum of a goaltender. Yeah. You got to keep, especially, you're getting a day off, sometimes 2 days off for the travel day. Igor's not fatigued.
There's no reason.
You're not sitting Igor. Don't mess with a good thing. Igor's looked good in net. Defenses look pretty good in front of him. Yeah. I got to give love to the Miller-Schneider pairing. Laviolette goes away from Miller-Trouba 2 days before the regular or 2 games before the regular season ends. They've been awesome. Key's been playing a great game. And Trouba and Lindgren were out there for the final 2 minutes and 48 seconds of that game because the Caps trapped them in there, and they held strong. So I'm seeing a lot of good things.
Nice.
They play Friday at 7 p.m. I do think that the Caps can take one of these games on the road. I'm curious to see if last line change opens up some stuff for Ovechkin. I have to think that Carberry is going to want to get Ovechkin lined up against Panarin's line. That's the weakest defensive line.
Yep.
And the Rangers at 5v5 feels like, I think at times they've even been playing like a box and one on Ovechkin. They're shadowing him on the power play when they can. I'm curious to see if the space opens up for Ovi, because like one shot on goal through two games
is crazy.
Yeah. He's been either invisible or a net negative if you think about the way that Mika stripped him on the power play.
He has no speed. Ovechkin has no speed, and that
he's
hurts.
Not mobile at all.
That
series,
hurts against the Rangers, who have so much speed. So, yeah, Ovi's gone. Where is he? I don't know.
Any final points?
I'm good.
Putin, maybe.
Ullmark Swayman?
No, let's get into it. So the Bruins go up 2-1. It was an exciting Bruins-Leafs game, as they tend to be. This situation I want to get into, and I'll throw it to Jack because you are, believe it or not, a Bruins fan, is that the Bruins have been going with a goalie tandem so far in this postseason. It almost feels like they're overcorrecting what they did last year against Florida, where they hung with Ullmark too long.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind it the first two games in terms of get Swayman a look, get Ullmark a look, see what's hot. I'm curious now for Game 4 where you stand. You've seen 2 games from Swayman. He's looked awesome. It's no knock on Ullmark, who I thought played a good Game 2 when they lost. I'm going to have a tough time getting over it if they go to Ullmark in Game 4 when it feels like Swayman's been the hotter hand these last 2 games.
I think Swayman, so they each get a game to start the series. Swayman gets the win. Ullmark gets the L. A lot of people were talking about, and I am of those people, that Ullmark was probably your best player in the game where they lost. In game two, Ullmark was probably the best player, where the Bruins didn't really generate much of anything. There's a direction I want them to take it, and I feel like there's a direction I know that they're going to take it. I think they're going to play Ullmark. I think they're going to keep doing it.
Too.
I think they're not going to, because there's a couple reasons why. I think, first of all, this may sound a little like a bit of a stretch, but I kind of think this could be the case. It seems like there's also a way in which, like, they know Swayman is their guy, but they want to keep Ullmark happy. Like, I think they want, and not like they're sacrificing a chance at a Stanley Cup to keep Ullmark happy or whatever that may be, but I'm just saying, like, it's already kind of weird that, like, they tried to trade him earlier in the season and he shut it down. His play has been streaky. He wins a Vezina last year, but then this year is a little more streaky. It's a little more up-down. Still looks great at times, doesn't look great at other times. I think the biggest thing that you saw against the Panthers last year was it almost seemed like the Swayman was frazzled when he came in game 7. I mean, wouldn't you be? Like, that's just the craziest situation
we keep
ever.
Talking about how I think that was one of their pitfalls, is they waited too late to turn to Swayman. You can't turn it to your backup goaltender in game 7.
Exactly. Now, I based on how Ullmark played in game 2, I have no problem sending him out there for game 4. I'm going to be honest with you. I thought he looked great. The thing is, I really do think that if you want to win a Stanley Cup final, you're going to be playing Jeremy Swayman as many games as you possibly can. He looks better. You even saw swarms in the game last night where he just stood on his head. Like, when the pressure rises and there's a bunch of, like, insane chances, a lot of flurry of shots, that's where Swayman shines. Like, that's where he becomes the Jeremy Swayman that he's been this season, that's been objectively the better goaltender of the two. But I do understand that you have not one but two elite goaltenders, and it's a position that a lot of people would like to be in, a lot of teams would like to be in. So had Ullmark played any differently on game 2, I'd maybe be looking at this a little bit differently. But because we're now through 3 games, and the only reason they're not 3-0 is because they couldn't generate a damn thing in game 2.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with Ullmark going back in their game 4, if that's what is decided on.
This might be a not dumb answer, but it's truly what I believe. Who are you going to start? It doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's all. I mean,
it doesn't freaking matter. Both goalies are so good, and watching Ullmark, I thought Ullmark was fantastic. I mean, what are you going to blame him for that?
No.
Domi lob shot to Matthews,
yeah,
like, to leave him wide open?
Yep.
Not at all. I thought it doesn't matter, and I thought the fact that he's hiding who his goalie is going to be before the game, I know the Leafs had some, like, Leafs fans were pissed about that or whatever.
I like it. Yeah,
don't tell him who you're going to start. It doesn't matter who you start. Whoever you put out there, you're going to have a chance to, not only a chance to win, they're going to help you win, and I don't think it matters who you play.
I think you can't go wrong either way, and I think you can even talk me into, you want to give each guy a couple games to really see who the hot end is. I just kind of feel for a deep playoff run, you're going to have to start leaning on one guy more than the other. I start, like, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it keeps them fresh and it really helps them go on a deep run. I just kind of feel like you get into playoff hockey, there is something to, you have a starting goaltender get hot and get into a rhythm where they're playing every 2-3 days.
I would agree if it was any other team or tandem than the Boston Bruins.
Yeah, what a great problem.
They have been doing this all year, right?
They've been doing it.
What a great problem.
Right.
This is, oh my God.
And they have a unique relationship with each other. Mm-hmm. They're rooting for each other, which I'm going to say this. Sometimes it feels like there's a little bit of a competition between Sorokin and Varlamov. Like, it and that is very real.
It feels like there's tension right now in that room when we're talking about the goalie decision with the Islanders.
Right.
Yeah.
So I feel like the Bruins are so blessed to have two goalies that not only support each other
and
but want each other to do well. And they hug.
It's cute.
It's very cute.
I love it.
It's such a great problem to have, and I'm going to stick with my guns. It doesn't matter who you play.
I don't think the Leafs are going to win another game in this series.
I agree.
I think this is going to be Boston's way. There's a big part of that where it's just my animosity towards the Leafs organization as a whole. I don't like them. I think they're a cesspool of people. I think they're mean, and I don't like them. That being said, the Bertuzzi-Marchand flip that he had, and then the goal, was one of the funniest things I've seen in this playoffs. And then
it's been fun seeing them beef with Bertuzzi.
Yeah,
it's been really fun.
Can I break some news?
Sure.
Please.
Bob Cole just passed away, who was the broadcaster of Hockey Night in Canada for so long. So, I mean, he started doing radio at St. John's in the 60s.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's been an icon of Hockey Night in Canada.
Absolutely.
Big reason for the viewership there. You know, he always that, oh, baby, exclamation point. I mean, that was always great. So Bob Cole, legend.
90 years old.
He was 90. Did well.
Wow. Wow. Shout out Bob Cole.
It's unfortunate breaking news.
Now I feel bad if I keep being mean to Leafs fans after that. But I just, no, I can't be mad at mean after that now.
Can we talk about the Leafs a little bit, I guess, with the Nylander situation? The report from Freeman is that, you know, closer to playing in Game 2 than Game 1, closer to playing in Game 3 than Game 2, has not made an appearance yet. A guy that played in all 82 games, and I already felt going into this series that Boston was in a better spot to win this series. Toronto without Nylander, man, I don't know how long they can last out, right? Like,
Elliot Friedman said it was a migraine issue.
Yeah, that's what I was seeing too.
For Nylander.
Huh. You get where anything head related, you start to get really worried about long term stuff and what that's connected
and
to.
And he also said that it was, I think it was last season. No, it was, I think it was. It was last season. I think it was September last season. I remember reading something that he told reporters that he switched to a tin advisor because of his migraines and how bad they were.
He said it helped.
Yeah. But yeah, they have no Nylander. They have no McMahon. No Bobby McMahon.
Yeah, it's a tough spot for Dry. I think I'm with you, Teach. I think this is Boston series to win.
I hate Toronto so much. Yeah. What a terrible place.
It's a terrible place.
What a terrible accent.
You're right though, Lou. It's Boston's to lose. Absolutely.
Injury related stuff, probably have to talk Demko too, right? Demko.
Oh, that's really
misses
bad.
Game 2.
Yeah.
Freeman was told not to speculate, but it is kind of on like he could be back for Game 3, but he could be out 2 weeks. And Vancouver plays a sloppy Game 2 where it feels like they're pressing. Nashville takes one 4-1 on the road, and all of a sudden that series is even at 1, and you know, you go from the first game of that series where it looks like, oh boy, we're in treat, Demko versus Saros, to all of a sudden, Casey dismissed your starting goaltender for the Vancouver Canucks. Mm. And all of a sudden, a Nashville team that I don't want to say that had written off, but I definitely felt like Vancouver, by far the stronger team in that series. All of a sudden, I think Nashville has more life. I still think Vancouver can come away with this series because they're a really good team. But I think Nashville's got a lot more life now.
Nashville got hot at the right time, though. And they were riding an 8-game winning streak coming into the playoffs. I don't know.
They played really well the last 2.5 months of the year. Nashville's not to be slept on.
Ryan O'Reilly is having an absolute resurgence. Gustav Nyquist is having a great year. Philip Forsberg. Mm. I mean, this team is deeper than you think it is. Yes. And sure, you watch Anthony Beauvillier miss a wide open net and you're like, this team's garbage, but they're not. They are actually very deep, and I love their defense. I think Ryan McDonagh has done a nice job, actually.
Guy with a lot of playoff experience. Been there, done that.
Yeah. Roman Josi is Roman Josi, but
it's a good team.
You look at this first power play unit, Forsberg, O'Reilly, Nyquist, Josi, Evangelista. That's a great power play, and I think that in a lesser experienced Vancouver team without Thatcher Demko is in serious, serious trouble. I have the Predators winning this series.
Interesting. Thing is, I remember you in the episode we lost in the fire, I remember you said you had, before Demko even went down, you had Nashville in 7.
I did. I had Nashville in 7. Wow. I think everyone is sleeping on this team, and playoffs in Nashville, just in that arena. There's not a lot of other places you would want to play anywhere else but Nashville.
I've got the Canucks going to the Cup because I'm going for the 94 thing.
Okay.
But that's kind of just vibes. But I'm worried about this Canucks team. I was really banking on Demko being there and like being a stabilizer for them in net.
You had every right to do that, by the way.
I had a great year. There's a lot of parallels. OJ in the news. Earthquakes, ellipses, Rangers are good.
Knicks,
like there's a lot of reasons I want to go all in that, but I'm sweating it out a little bit. Can we talk Avs Jets? I think that's been the best.
Okay.
For my money, that's been the best series so far. I don't know if you guys feel differently about it.
I do feel differently.
Really?
There's been a better series.
What's that one?
And it's
Oilers Kings. Okay, fine. Yep. We can talk that one first since you're a Kings fan as well.
Last night was
what?
Nothing.
Nothing.
No, what'd you say?
I said Taylor Macedo had ass because you.
Because you can't pick teams.
You like multiple teams.
Yeah, but
it's not as bad as Taylor, but it's close.
You're right. It's not as bad as it's Taylor. I have a good explanation.
You
for
lived
why
in L.A.
He can't live.
He can't be catching strays when I do the same thing for Detroit. I get it.
Yeah, man.
He can't be catching strays. I do the same thing.
I take everything back. I love you.
Yeah, that was the best, not the best game of hockey I've seen the Los Angeles Kings play, but that first line between Kopitar, Byfield, and Kempe.
Oh my God.
Is the most disgusting thing that I've ever seen on the ice. All of them have eyes in the back of their head. I watch these behind the back passes, even Arvidsson doing it on the boards. And sorry, voice crack, fellas. I got into puberty late.
I was into this.
Anyway. Yeah, great team. Great team win. Kopitar is turning it on again. Kempe, did you see that the second goal that Kempe just whacked right out of the
Yes,
air?
Yes.
That was
ridiculous.
That's the best goal of the playoffs that I've seen so far. I don't know if you would disagree.
Marchand's is pretty good.
Did you see Marchand's last night?
Did you see the tight window that he's not
unreal.
That's pretty crazy.
That was very good.
I'm trying to think of anything else.
Those are the best two that I can
think of. I can tell you what the best save of the playoffs is.
Oh, my God.
Bobrovsky, that was crazy.
Sneaky fun series. I got to say, I'm trying to think. I have never seen a save like that back to the shooter. You're facing the net,
just this photo,
and you just lunge.
Oh, is ridiculous. God.
And it's also,
I think it's the best playoff save I've seen since. Is it better than Aiden Hill's last year?
Oh, that one was great.
Right?
Ooh.
That's the first one that came. I was thinking of big playoff saves last couple of years. That was the first one that came to mind. I can't think of anything else.
The thing I love about the Bobrovsky save, though, is, again, you don't see it all that often that a goalie goes fully airborne to make a save. Like, when you see a goalie leave their feet, it is a crazy thing. Like, because a lot of times it's gliding really hard to the side or, like, laying out on, like, your ribs to try to make. But he literally, his skates left the ground. Like, he
Bobby Orr style.
Yeah.
I was sitting two seats down from Johnny Lazarus, and it took him 30 seconds to actually tell us what happened because he just went, "Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God!" And just never like, "All right, Johnny, what's happening?" And then eventually you find out.
Guys, this is not hockey related. Okay, but I just want to let you know, I have student texts on for the Mets, like for City Field, for like ticket promos.
Dollar dog.
But it went viral on opening day that the veteran of the day was Seymour Wiener.
What a legend! Yes. What a
they brought back Seymour Wiener for Dollar Dog Night.
The Photoshop of him was a dog.
Yeah,
is
it says $1 hot dogs. Everyone loves a wiener. Seymour Wiener wants you to come to Dollar Dog Night at Citi Field, presented by Nathan's. I'm so there.
We love other sports.
We love. Oh my God.
And so
you can
I just got the text too.
You can get a ticket for 5 hot dogs.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Onto the Tampa Florida series, since we talked about Bravosky, I will say Tampa's got a real good shot to take two at home here and make this. I don't think this is a series that Florida's just going to dominate.
I think Florida.
I would say I don't know that they've done. I think it's been tightly fought. Florida's won two tightly fought games. I think Florida wins this series. Tampa's too good and too competitive to go down in a 4-game sweep or even a 5-game series loss. I think they, whether it's taking two on the home, whether it's taking one from Florida on the road, obviously these two teams hate each other. There's history dating back to when Florida won the President's Trophy.
The way that these teams match up and also how physical and tightly played that those first two games of the series are, if I think Florida's winning this series, and for the sake of my predictions, I want them to win this series. But I would be lying to you if I said that it wouldn't be just depressing to see the series end in 4 games. For what this series
could
be.
It's too exciting for it to go.
The way that those first two games went, it's one, you know, you're watching a good series when, like, 2-0 should have you devastated if you're, like, on the other side of it. I understand that there's plenty of time to come back into a series, but, like, down 2-0 to the Panthers, like, that should have, like this guy looks like you're going to see him on the 5 o'clock news later.
I'm a little worried.
Because he's just upset about his team being down 2-0. He's not,
deleting tweets.
You know, he's deleting tweets.
Hey,
He's not wearing pants.
Pretty like, soon you're going to be, like, sending cryptic tweets, playing chess online. I don't know.
It's a spitballing.
Lou Orlando sending cryptic tweets at the bar tonight, watching the Islanders game.
What's this Barty's? What's going on? I don't know what's going on. I'm confused.
Okay, but Vasilevsky hasn't looked as good as I think. Like, yes, he only gave up, what, 3 goals in each game?
Yeah.
But what, the save percentage is at like 900? Yeah. That's not great to me.
I mean, he turned it on a little bit down the stretch, but Vasilevsky has not been prime Vasi, which makes sense. He had back surgery in the fall.
Getting outdone by Bob, bro.
I don't think that they win this Florida series. And I will, Bob Borowski, man, come playoffs. How special is he? Like, he's awesome.
Big save, Bob.
No, I have Florida making a little bit of a deep run here. I do want to get, can we talk Avs Jets?
This is
a really interesting series. 6 goals were scored in the first period of game one.
That was great.
Winnipeg wins 7-6, and then Avs come back and win game two, 5-2. So that series is tied at 1. A big comeback game for Georgiev.
Mm.
I still have no idea where this series is headed. Like, I keep saying to Jack, this series, more than anything else, to me, is the biggest coin flip.
Yeah.
I have Avalanche in 6.
I have Avs going to the conference finals for vibes.
Way, yeah.
But I'm not making the mistake of sleeping on Winnipeg this year.
No.
Yeah, I just don't like Jesse Pollock anymore. So
that's fair.
That guy is getting so annoying. Have you seen what he's been doing at outside the Leafs games?
We were talking about this a couple days ago.
He's got a little goofball. He's just a little riling up the fans.
There's goofy, and then there's...
It's into the point where it's corny. It's a little
candy
ass.
It's not even corny, but like, he's not... He's a Jets fan standing outside the Leafs arena while all these... Look, I'm the first to disparage Leafs fans. These people are diehard fans standing outside the arena, and as soon as the Leafs start losing, he just absolutely just starts going after them right after they lost. I'm surprised he did not get beat up.
Yeah,
I'm really
he's
surprised
gotta
he
have
didn't
a
get
bodyguard
beat up.
With him, because some of those videos were just like embarrassing to watch.
Yeah,
I
feel bad for Jets fans actually that he's their representative.
Yeah,
go ahead, Lou.
The Avs run the risk of running themselves thin. I already think that they've run Georgiev thin. They played him 63 times in the regular season.
That's insane.
You can't do that.
Jeez.
And they are really playing. They're really leaning on MacKinnon, Makar, and Nichushkin. I think they're playing them a lot. I do worry about fatigue with this team in terms of a long run. I think they can get through. They can tough out a Winnipeg series. But I look at the West, and it looks like it could be a gauntlet in every single round. And when you look at the East and you go, okay, looks like the Rangers and Canes, that's what makes a potential Rangers-Canes matchup so interesting, is that those seem like the two series that could end the quickest.
Mm.
And one of those teams is going to take each other out in round two, potentially. Mm. And on the West, it's like everything could be a bloodbath.
And I also, with regards to the Avalanche, I feel like they're very much... last year's Florida Panthers in the way where they are battered and it could come to hurt them in the later stages, because I think they are going to handle the Jets and that'll be fine. But in later physical stages, they might not have it.
I really do think if there's a year for an Eastern Conference team to win the Stanley Cup, it's this year. Like, I think any team that comes out of the West, the way that those series are constructed right now, I think any team that's to come out of the West is going to be exhausted by the time they reach the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
I really do. I think it bodes well for any, because, like, don't get me wrong, there's going to be series that become exhausting on the Eastern Conference side. But, like,
Florida-Tampa.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Florida-Tampa.
Boston-Toronto.
If God forbid Toronto takes another one from Boston, whoever wins that series, God forbid, it's really more the top half of the Eastern Conference bracket, though. If it's two sweeps or 2 5-game series on the top part of the bracket, keep laughing.
No, I'm kidding.
if it's, you know, teams that are just having their way in series more, if these series keep going quickly on the Eastern Conference side, like, there's never been a year for an Eastern Conference team to win the Cup than like this year. Because you have the number one seed in the Western Conference down 2-0 right now, because they have to play the Knights in the first round.
Let's finish it. We got about 5 minutes left in the record file. Vegas is up 2-0 on Dallas. I went back and forth on Dallas when I was, you know, making my picks for the bracket challenge. I came around on, they're so deep, I believe in Ottinger, and this stupid Vegas team that Cap circumvented is up 2-0, And I really want to see some fight from Dallas, but you just lost two games on the road, and now you got to go back to Vegas. I'm not feeling good.
I had Vegas in five.
No, you don't feel great. Yeah, I thought the Knights are going to win this, but I really just hate them. Loathe entirely.
My thing is, like, if it's not going to be this year for Dallas, when is it going to be? This is the best Dallas team that we've seen in a minute. They're so deep. Like, you've got three awesome lines. You've got a really solid blue line, and you have a talented goalie in Jake Oettinger. I know he's having one of his worst seasons of his career, but we've seen him be a playoff beast. Like, if it's not going to be this year, when?
I'm just looking at the Knights' lines, and I'm about to start crying. This is such a good team. This is such a remarkably good team with Hurdle now on the team and Hanifin now on the team because Mark Stone couldn't play. Oh.
Scores a goal in game one.
That's such BS. I hate them so much.
Yes. They do nothing to help themselves. And I have watched too many Vegas Golden Knights games in the last 2 years to ever count this team out. They're a menace to play against. And they're so fast on the rush. The best thing I think that the Golden Knights do is they turn on the jets like that, and in a 8-second span, they could be in their own zone and score a goal because Jack Eichel takes off. And they have so many players that can do that. It's that first line will outperform the other team's first line. Second line will outperform the other team's second line. You never get an advantage against the Vegas Golden Knights. You just have to hang in there and hope you win.
I'm going to end the show with a shout-out to Zach Hyman, playing great hockey. He's got a great name.
Okay.
Do you know who the left side third defense pair left defenseman on the Golden Knights is?
Who?
Alec Martinez!
That's my guy. That's my guy, Alec Martinez. That's my guy. He's the one Golden Knight I don't hate.
Islanders play tonight at 7:30 against the Hurricanes.
Lou will be watching
in the series.
Love you, Alec.
Lou will be watching.
I'll be watching. Rangers will play Friday at 7 against the Caps. Rangers are up 2-0.
Lou will also be watching.
Yes, that's true. Jack, do you have any final jokes or lines that you want to make before I end this thing?
Just have fun.
I will.
Have fun tonight.
I will have fun. We will have fun.
Yes, y'all will have fun.
The 5-3 family will have so much fun. Boys, it's been a pleasure. Two Rangers beat reporters, Lou Orlando, Jack Warner. Two Islanders beat reporters.
Your evening will be a pleasure.
Nick Palmer, Mike Matuch. I'm going to have a great night tonight. So excited. Giddy even, honestly, if being real.
Yeah.
Like 5-3, as always, a production of WFU Sports. Take care, everyone.